All right, hey, back again, one of our favorites there, Will Miles. Of course, you know him from Read and Reaction, and they just got their latest Florida 2024 preview magazine. They were kind enough to send me one. Will, thank you so much for joining us for the second edition of this handheld magazine here.
Yeah, well, thanks for having us on. So actually, 2 years ago, we did a digital-only copy. And then last year, everybody said, after we released that, everybody said, hey, we want a hard copy. So we did that last year. And I had like 500 of them lined up on my kitchen table and was sending them out. So this year, the hard copies are available on Amazon, so I don't have to deal with the shipping. But you can also buy a digital copy as well over at our website. And, we're excited. I mean, it's funny. I think I've been sort of pretty down on the Gators all year long, but as we delved into the magazine, a bunch of different statistics that you sort of look at, especially on the defensive side of the ball, you go, there's some reasons for hope here. And that's all you're looking for as a college football fan. That's why I'm so into recruiting, because recruiting is always about hope. It's about what's coming next. And, you know, if you're not winning like Alabama or Georgia, then you got to be selling hope to your fan base. And so I think that's one of the things that people are going to come away from this magazine with, is reasons and statistical reasons, and hopefully some film reasons as well, for hope and optimism. And let's be honest, after 6-7 and 5-7 the last 2 years, that's something that's in short supply there in Gainesville.
Right. And so before we get rolling and discuss the magazine, what's the easiest place for people to go and actually purchase it? And I'll put a link in the show notes for people to follow as well.
Awesome. I appreciate that. So you can go to readandreaction.com/mag. So that's readandreaction.com/MAG. That'll take you to both the digital and the hard copy version. There'll be links in there. You can also just go to Amazon and search Read and Reaction, and it'll pop right up. And you can buy the hard copy there. So if you want to buy the digital copy, you got to come to our website. If you want to buy the hard copy, you can either come through our website or you can go to Amazon directly.
All right. And you know, like you said, we've all grew up reading these magazines. Athlon, Lindy's, Phil Still, on and on and on. What is the reason that you and Nick want to do your own version for the Florida Gators?
Yeah, so Nick Knudsen, who helps me run the website, he and I, a couple years ago, we were looking through the Lindy's magazines, and what we realized is we read a couple of pages on Florida, and I went to Virginia Tech too, so I would read a couple of pages on the Hokies, and then the magazines just sort of sat there all off season, and there wasn't anything that really got into depth of what was going on. Okay, I know the roster, I know the turnover, I see a couple of coaches' opinions, maybe opposing coaches' opinions about what's going on. That's really cool. It's an awesome product, but it's not for Florida fans. And so our vision is to take this to all the other schools in the SEC as well, and hopefully all the Power Five schools as well. So, you know, I know your audience is not entirely Florida fans. Not everybody's going to sit there and look at this magazine. But what I would say is that if you're interested in this sort of thing, drop me a line at my email. Come onto the website, take a look at it. Let me know you're interested in your market, because we are going to start expanding. So it's 70 pages of Florida Gator only, a lot of breakdowns from a statistical perspective, from a recruiting perspective, and from a film perspective. And really, our moniker at the website is we want to help people be a smarter fan. And so that's what we're trying to do here. And that's how we're trying to differentiate.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it goes without saying, Will, that if you're talking Florida Gators, I mean, there's two things. I'd be curious if it's the same too for you, but anytime I bring up Florida, there's two things that are just universally brought up, and it's the schedule, which we'll get to in a minute, and the other is Billy Napier, and is he going to get fired? Is he on the hot seat and all this? And in the preview magazine, you kind of allude to the fact that Florida would be wise to kind of preach a little patience here. Is that where you are right now? And how about the fan base? I mean, what are the majority of Florida fans saying after two disappointing seasons?
Well, so the funny part is that the people who are out on any sort of head coach are typically out after about 12 months. And so those people have just gotten louder and louder and louder. That's one of the beauties of college football, is everybody's so passionate about it and they have their opinions. And I think you got two camps. You got the people who are saying, give him time, give him time, give him time. And you've got the people who are saying, look, he's already had enough time. We haven't seen what we need to see. And I think in my heart of hearts, I kind of fall more on the side of, I think we've seen what we need to see. At the same time, I recognize that there are some unique challenges with name, image, and likeness and some other things that are going on. Certainly Florida's had some bumps in the road, especially recently when it comes to that. And so the point I was trying to make in the article that I wrote is that When Florida got rid of Will Muschamp, they had Lamar Jackson essentially committed. He hadn't formally committed yet, but he told people after he went to Louisville that I would have come to Florida had that staff been there. He really wanted Kurt Roper and Will Muschamp there as his coaches, and he decides to go to Louisville. Well, can you imagine those Jim McElwain defenses in 2015 and 2016 with Lamar Jackson at quarterback? And with DJ Lagway in the fold, the five-star quarterback that Florida brings in this year as a true freshman, probably isn't going to play a ton this year. And so the question then becomes, if, especially the way the transfer rules work now, are you missing out on potentially a guy like Lamar Jackson if you decided to part ways with Billy Napier and that caused something to happen where DJ Lagway went someplace else? Like, how would you feel as a fan if 3 years from now you're watching DJ Lagway light it up for Auburn? Right, or you're watching him light it up for Ole Miss, or you're watching him light it up for Ohio State or whatever. And so I think in the transfer portal era, you got to take that into account. That doesn't mean you don't make a change if you feel like you need to make a change. And if Florida goes 3-3 and 9 this year, I'm not sure there's any way you can keep him because, like I said earlier, college football is about selling championships or selling hope. And if you can't sell either one of those, then you're gonna struggle. But yeah, you think about a couple years ago with Dan Mullen when he had Anthony Richardson behind Emory Jones. And Richardson, one of the reasons the fans got so upset with Mullen is Richardson, every time he came out there, would put up an 80-yard touchdown. And then they'd go back to Emory Jones and the offense would sort of stagnate a little bit. It's like, just give AR a chance. Like, maybe he doesn't know the offense as well, but every time he gets out there, it's an 85-yard touchdown. And in some ways, that was the hope that Dan Mullen could have sold, and he chose not to, and that sort of let him out the door. So I'm really fascinated to see how Billy Napier sells that DJ Lagway hope this year. I suspect they're going to have some fairly significant packages for him, especially as the season progresses. And look, if Graham Mertz struggles at all, obviously there's going to be some noise for Lagway to come in and play often.
Right. Well, if it makes you feel any better, Will, I think we all know that Will Muschamp probably would have put Lamar Jackson at safety or something. So even if had he went there, but and also, hey, new to the magazine, this was I'll be a real treat to see. And you guys reached out beforehand, so I don't want anyone to think this is like some kind of like you were throwing Shane and I under the bus or anything. But we are featured in the magazine on a page of the new, like I said, new this year, bulletin board material. What made you guys want to throw this out there? Is it just because of outside of Gainesville, outside of Florida fans? Like I'm saying, the narrative is Florida's going to be awful. Billy's going to get fired. I mean, it doesn't seem to be much positivity outside of the fan base.
Yeah, well, so you showed the cover there, and the cover says Florida versus the world. And there's a couple of reasons we chose that. One is if you looked at Trevor Etienne last year and the eye black that he had underneath, he always had Florida versus or Gators versus everybody or something like that underneath in the eye black. And so we thought that was kind of a fun shot at Etienne since he decided to transfer to a rival who's set up for a national championship run. And then beyond that, so we like to have fun like that, right? A couple of years ago, we called Georgia the SEC champion runner-ups, even though they won the national title. So, we like having a little bit of fun like that. But beyond that, it's that the narrative is that Napier is essentially on borrowed time, that the Florida program is behind everyone else in the SEC. And look, I mean, given the fact that Napier has not succeeded in his first couple of years via one-loss record or even via recruiting, like he hasn't been recruiting at a level that you would expect for national championship teams at Florida or anywhere else. I think there's a lot of truth to that. At the same time, the sky is falling type of narrative that goes around, hey, you got to play Miami to open the season. Well, Miami under Cristobal wasn't any great shakes last year. Texas A&M decided to change their coach. So you got Miami, Samford, Texas A&M, and Mississippi State to start the year. There's an opportunity for Florida to jump out and actually surprise some people, especially early on. Now, we'll talk about the schedule a little bit later, and it gets harder as things go. But, look, we see a lot. Last year, nobody would have picked Missouri to go 11-2. And by the time you got to the end of the year, Florida fans were looking at that with dread, going, oh man, are we going to lose five straight to lose the year or to end the year? They did, thanks to a few screw-ups on special teams for Florida. But no one would have picked Missouri as a surefire loss early in the year, and those sorts of things happen. So to me, that's the thing is those kids in the weight room and on the field and when they've been preparing have heard they're not very good now for the last 12 months. Billy Napier came in here saying he was going to change the culture, and the question becomes, has he changed the culture enough to where all of the on-field stuff, the special team screw-ups, the penalties, all that stuff starts to turn around? And look, the line between 8-4 and 4-8 in college football is pretty narrow. And an 8-4 season buys Napier at least one more year. A 4-8 season probably throws him out the door. So, that's the stakes this year. And so it really is Florida hunkering down, trying to prove that they're better than everybody thinks. And that's why we sort of chose that as the theme.
Yeah. Yeah. Wisely chosen, in my opinion. One thing I really wanted to ask you about, EPA, expected points added. This is something also featured in last year's magazine as well, if memory serves, and just the emphasis you put on it. And to further illustrate the point, the SEC was essentially in two tiers with EPA last season. There was Georgia, of course, LSU, Bama, Ole Miss, Mizzou, Tennessee, and Texas A&M. That was essentially tier one. Tier two was Auburn, Kentucky, Florida, South Carolina, Arkansas, Mississippi State, and then, of course, way down there, Vanderbilt. But probably my favorite nugget of the whole magazine, and hell, I say this as a Tennessee grad, tier one was 17-1 against tier two last year, with the sole loss being Florida beating Tennessee. Of course, every damn year they beat Tennessee. But why so much emphasis in your mind on EPA?
Well, so EPA is a stat, like you said, it means expected points added, and it's a stat that takes context into account. So on 3rd-and-1, if you run for 2 yards, that is a significant positive EPA. If 3rd-and-10, you decide to hand off on a draw and you gain 2 yards, that's a significant negative play. And we all know that when you're watching the game, and the fans in the stadium boo when the head coach decides to hand it off on 3rd-and-10 rather than going for the first down. And so schools or programs that offensively or defensively perform well with EPA really do seem to correlate with both wins and losses and points being scored. And so you can look at an offense last year like Ole Miss and say, well, how good were they really? They scored a lot of points, but were the underlying statistics, do they indicate that's reproducible this year? And the same thing when you look at Florida's defense last year. That's one of the nuggets in the magazine later on, is Florida's defense, based on success rate and EPA, should actually have been a lot better last year than it was. Now, that doesn't make Florida fans feel any better, having had to watch that dumpster fire in 2023 of a defense. At the same time, what it should do is make Florida fans feel better about Austin Armstrong coming in and improving things over Patrick Toney. And, are things going to be perfect this year? No, I don't think so. I wasn't a huge fan of the Armstrong hire to begin with, but you can use EPA as a proxy for how good was the defense or how good was the offense really, beyond sort of, some of the goofy stuff that happens. Like, a lot of times you'll see a team that scores a bunch of points and they have a ton of explosives, but they're not real consistent. So like the Florida offenses with Emory Jones, I would even say the Tennessee offense with Joe Milton, the difference between him and Hooker, probably, I'd have to go back and look at it, but I bet you it has to do a lot with success rate, less than it does explosivity. Now Josh Heupel does a really nice job of putting his quarterbacks in position to succeed and have successful plays. It's one of the things I think he does really well. So to me, EPA is the logical thing because it's context-based, and it's play over play over play. So over the course of 600 plays in a year, you get an idea of how a team plays. And look, it correlates. I mean, we showed it in the magazine. You mentioned it, right? The teams that are in that top tier dominated the teams in the second tier. And if you want to use that as a gambling proxy, go ahead. If you think Alabama and Georgia are going to be in that top tier of EPA per play, you can pick them every week, because at least on the money line, because they're going to win all those games against sort of the mid-tier and low-tier SEC teams.
Mm-hmm. And one other nugget that I absolutely love here is Billy Napier's trying to become the first coach since Ron Zook to avoid being a multi-loss coach to Tennessee. I mean, my God, you got to kick Tennessee as many times as possible in this damn book, huh?
Well, that one's Nick. That one's definitely Nick. But I mean, look, we don't have a lot to hold on to right now. And so, like I said, a couple of years ago, after Georgia lost in the SEC championship game to Alabama, but then won the national championship, we spent the entire magazine calling them the SEC runner-ups. And, I'm not sure we even mention ETN anymore on the website of the podcast. Who's calling Voldemort? He's he who shall not be named. So enjoy a little bit of good back and forth. And I'm sure that the Tennessee fans will not hesitate to let me know if Florida ends up losing to the Vols this year. And I think I'm going to try to get to Knoxville this year. So hopefully I'll be able to walk out of there like I did in 2018 and head held high, and everybody who gave me crap on the way in will be quiet on the way out.
Yeah. Well, how much does you kind of mentioned it already, but DJ Lagway, having him on the roster, what how does that change things for the Gators? Because I think before we saw Graham Mertz last year, I think you would assume, had we gotten to this point, we landed DJ Lagway, he looks good in a spring game. I think the conclusion drawn would be like, well, it's only a matter of time before he's our starting quarterback as a true freshman. But I think Graham Mertz, I have him as the breakout candidate in the SEC at the quarterback position. He blew me away. I had him as the worst starting quarterback in the SEC, and he was far from that. And going year two in Billy Napier's system, I mean, I think it would the only reason he wouldn't be the starter would be injury or some kind of disaster in my view. So how does getting Lagway in just kind of change the narrative, change the design? I know everybody likes to point to Tim Tebow, Chris Leak, that 1 year. I'm not sure that's a great comparison, but how does that factor in? And have you at all considered, and I know we're not trying to be overly negative here, but have you considered, what if division in the locker room or something like that, if Mertz struggles and they got Lagway here and he comes in and maybe he looks outstanding in the fourth quarter against Miami and Texas A&M, and could there be any issues that arise from that?
Well, I mean, I think it's a legitimate concern. If you watch that Swamp Kings documentary that talked about Leak and Tebow, you could tell there was some animus from some of the players on Tebow's behalf. And then, the fact that Leak wasn't involved, and they glossed over some stuff that Leak really provided to that team in the documentary. And I think some of that has to do with probably some animus that crept up in that particular team. And that's a team that won the national championship, right? So I don't think anybody expects Florida to win the national championship this year. Now, the benefit of the schedule is if they overperform, like if Florida somehow pulls out 9-3, they should be in the playoff. I don't think there's any doubt about that, given who they're going to play. But to your point, I think it ramps up the pressure. I think it ramps up the pressure on everybody. I think it ramps up the pressure on Mertz. I think it ramps up the pressure on Napier. I think it ramps up the pressure just on the team in general. But look, I mean, after you've been under 500 for 2 straight years, that's what happens in Gainesville. The pressure gets ramped up. I mean, again, going back to the Swamp Kings documentary, Urban Meyer went 9-3 and almost had an ulcer, and was sitting there thinking he was going to get fired at 9-3. And we're sitting here coming off of 6-7 and 5-7. Going, hey, it's time to show the fan base something. It's time to show people that you can really turn this ship around. So whether that's more pressure or not, I don't necessarily know. I'll tell you that when you look at both the high school stats and the film, and we've got some of that in the magazine where we broke down high school plays of Lagway, and I know people look like to poo-poo high school stuff, but I'll tell you what, I think you can tell a lot by looking at the high school stats, especially completion percentage. And then the other thing you can do is you can see Lagway likes going downfield and is not somebody who checks the ball down. I've actually taken a lot of criticism this offseason because I think Mertz greatly overperformed what my expectations were. I think he reached his ceiling of what I thought it would be coming off of his years at Wisconsin. I don't know that there's another step to take. I think he's a very effective quarterback within the framework of the offense, but he was dead last year in average depth of target. And he was the king of checkdowns in the SEC. He had the highest number of checkdowns of any starting quarterback in the SEC. And look, Florida's offensive line wasn't great shakes last year. You can make a lot of excuses, but the big thing, and we have a piece in the magazine that talks about this, he actually had a better quarterback rating when he was under pressure, or Pro Football Focus rating when he was under pressure, than he did when he had a clean pocket. So he wasn't executing when he had a clean pocket. And I think that's the thing he's going to have to improve this year. When he's got a clean pocket, he's going to have to trust his read, trust that he read the coverage correctly, and he's going to have to start going downfield. When he went downfield, he was actually really good. He just didn't do it very often. And if he can't pull the trigger to go downfield, I actually think that's when you bring in Lagway. I think the reality is Florida's going to have to stretch the defense in some capacity this year. They just don't have, they don't have Ricky Pearsall. They don't have a first round NFL draft pick sitting there on the outside along with Trey Wilson. They brought in some guys who are in the transfer portal, especially who are decent pieces, but I don't think any of them's Ricky Pearsall. So they're going to have to go downfield strategically based on what the defense is giving them. Mertz struggled with that a little bit last year. So is there that next step? Can he progress to not just like Brady Cook, but you kind of need him to be in that you know, Jalen Milroe type of range in terms of, now Milroe was an extreme example of going downfield all the time, but you got to take some shots. And Florida just didn't take a whole lot of shots last year. And without doing that, I'm not sure this offense is going to be able to produce what it needs to produce.
Mm-hmm. Probably my favorite part of the magazine, to get back into that, is just you got a lot of play diagrams with QR code. And I was telling you off air, like, I can read something 10 times. I don't retain it as well as if I get to actually see the play, which you have these QR codes. You just, you know, with your phone very easily, it takes you to YouTube while you're breaking down the play here. How much time did you go into, did it take to do all that? And any specific reason for the plays you've selected here? Because you got several of them.
Yeah, so we have an entire section that is based on Trey Wilson, the now true sophomore wide receiver who caught like 61 passes last year. And I think Billy Napier did a lot of creative things to get him the ball. There are some examples where we've got him getting the ball in the backfield with the running back as the lead blocker. We've got some examples where they're using him as a decoy to open other things up. And then we've got some suggestions that we have in terms of what could you do around the NFL or even some other plays in college football. One play we picked was from the playoff game between Georgia and Ohio State a couple years ago, where Ohio State brought a wide receiver into the backfield and used that to exploit what Georgia does on defense. So what we were trying to do was sort of express that it's important that people don't expect Trey Wilson to be the replacement for Ricky Pearsall, because if he's the replacement for Ricky Pearsall, then you got to find a replacement for Trey Wilson. Now, recently, Florida's brought in Elijah Badger, the wide receiver transfer from Arizona State. He's caught, I think, 130 balls over the last 2 years. So my guess is they're going to plug him into the Pearsall role. They'll have Shamir Dike, the transfer from Wisconsin, sort of as a safety blanket for Mertz. And then Wilson is going to stay in that role where he's going around. So that was we have some for Mertz where we looked at some of what he does and some of his limitations. We've got some stuff for Lagway as well, but the real labor of love was the Trey Wilson section. And there it built, right? It's, hey, you see this formation, you see what they do out of it. You see where they're trying to get him the ball. And hey, here's the fake that they do off of that. This is what they established in the South Carolina week that then carried forward into Georgia. So that first drive against Georgia where Florida drove right down the field, that was all predicated on what they had shown South Carolina the week before. And Georgia was ready for what they'd shown South Carolina the week before. They weren't ready for the adjustments off of that, or 2 weeks before, I guess. They weren't ready for the adjustments off of that that Florida had. And then they were ready for it the rest of the game, and Florida's offense stagnated. But again, I mean, you know, there's been a lot of criticism of Billy Napier as an offensive coordinator. There's been a lot of criticism of his scheme. I don't necessarily disagree with the criticism of the fact that he needs to be more of a game manager and make sure that the operations aren't suffering. But from a schematic standpoint, there's not something like fundamentally wrong with his offense. Now, would I prefer the way that Josh Heupel does it, where he really sets up his guys to succeed based on formations, and that he essentially gets the defense to declare what they're going to do because he's got his wide receivers spread out so wide? I think that, I mean, for the college game, that's brilliant. And you should just exploit it as best you can. The wide hashes really make it easy to do that. If I had my preferences, I would say, yeah, that's an offense that I would want to run because it makes it easy for the quarterback. But that's not what Napier does. But Napier's offense has a lot of adjustments that you can make off of what he's trying to do. And that's what we tried to show in the magazine, is this is Florida's most explosive player. This is how they get him the ball. And this is how we think he should get him the ball to get him downfield a little bit more often next year. And hopefully we're able to do that.
Yeah. And just probably my favorite part of the magazine, just because it's something unique that you guys do. That, again, there's many magazines out there, but I'm not aware of any that are breaking it down in this amount of detail, especially with a video that correlates with it. So good job there. And then there's obviously a section on the defense. You kind of hit on it. You think they'll be better, but is it? Here's kind of where I'm at, Will, because it's kind of sad to me that, again, you've hit on it yourself. I mean, Billy Napier has struggled seemingly with management and things of that nature, and I think Ron Roberts is a good defensive mind. I mean, he's been at Auburn. He's been at Baylor when they were really good. Of course, his mentor fired him. But it seems like they hired a defensive coordinator to coach their defensive coordinator. And maybe I'm wrong by saying that, but that's kind of what it looks like from the outside looking in. And I do know for a fact that he is, and again, I'm talking Ron Roberts here, but he has had issues in the past with, I mean, look no further than last year, but I put more of that on Hugh Freeze than I do anybody else. But kind of rambling here. But basically, what is your thoughts on basically having a very young off defensive mind and then hiring someone that runs his scheme, that is more experienced, that's going to work under him? This is another thing that I think on paper looks good, Will, but we'll see how it goes. You know, I think just like last year at Alabama, we had Kevin Steele and we seemingly had a coordinator change in the middle of the season. And I think that, I don't know, it could set up for a disaster.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in some ways, and this will sound weird as a Florida fan maybe, but in some ways I either want it to crash and burn or I want it to be successful, like very successful. I don't want the 6-6. Well, give him another year. Like, you know, when Muschamp struggled, I think it was 2013, everybody gave him another year, but knew he was a dead man walking in 2014. You end up with Jim McElwain. I think they had some success going to Dan Mullen. You could argue that that was the wrong hire, but they did have some success with Dan Mullen in some ways because they pulled the plug on Jim McElwain when they knew Mullen was the guy they wanted to go after. So I am very much of the mindset that you want to know. You don't want to sit there and wonder and be on the fence. And so if it turns into a mess and it turns into a disaster, like at least we know. But they've done the same thing at special teams. They didn't get rid of Chris Couch, who was the special teams guy. They brought in another guy to lead special teams while they've got a special teams analyst out there who did it last year. The thing that I'm going to be fascinated with is whether the lessons that Roberts learned at Baylor, whether those come with him. Because if you look at the Louisiana defenses and the coverages, so we partnered with Sports Info Solutions to get middle of the field covered, middle of the field closed, and middle of the field open data for defenses. And what you see is Louisiana's defenses were very much middle of the field closed centric under Roberts and then under Napier after Roberts left. And Austin Armstrong was part of that. If you look at what he did at Florida last year, it was very similar to exactly what you would expect from those Louisiana defenses. When Roberts went to Baylor, it switched, and all of a sudden he was doing much more middle of the field open. So less blitzing, trying to keep things in front of you, trying to prevent explosive plays. And that carried through to Auburn last year. There was a little bit more blitzing, but it did not flip all the way back to the Louisiana days in terms of middle of the field closed and daring people on the outside to take you deep. And last year, Florida got beat on explosive play after explosive play after explosive play. That was their bugaboo. That was the thing that completely destroyed the defense, was just not being able to make a tackle when you left a guy out on an island and it turns into an 80-yard play instead of a 14-yard play. And I think Roberts is going to bring that. I think he's going to temper the aggressiveness that Austin Armstrong has. The question will be, does Armstrong want to be tempered? And that's where the tension may come in. And I honestly don't know. I don't know. And I'm looking at it the same way everybody from the outside is I'm looking at it saying, this could be a powder keg ready to go off. This could be something where, you know, two games in, those guys are having a fist fight in the locker room and all of a sudden, you know, Napier has to choose from. But it could also be the most brilliant thing in the world, because I don't think anybody doubts that Armstrong is a good young defensive mind. I think what they doubt is whether the aggressiveness that he dials up, and this was my criticism when he came in, like my article on Austin Armstrong when he came into Florida said that I hated the hire with the heat of 1,000 suns. And I got a lot of criticism for it, but the point was that he was so aggressive in areas where he didn't need to be. A lot of cover zero coverage when he was at Southern Miss, when he didn't need to do it, where he had the offense backed up and he was going for a knockout punch, and all of a sudden you leave a corner on an island and it turns into some sort of huge play. We saw that a lot at Florida last year. And so my hope is that Roberts is going to be able to rein that in a little bit. Say, look, there's a time to be aggressive. There's a time to go for the knockout punch. But the time to go for the knockout punch is not when you got a corner on the outside who's struggling on any sort of deep pass and doesn't like to tackle. Like, those are two things that we probably need to not combine. And look, Florida's had a lot of turnover at the cornerback position. Jason Marshall's back, but Jaden Hill's gone and Jalen Kimber's gone. Two of the guys who ranked lowest when you look at like their Pro Football Focus rankings and their on off ratings and those sorts of things. So I suspect Florida's defensive backfield is going to be a little bit better, but I think what you're going to see is less aggressiveness dialed up from the defense. At least if these guys are working well together, that'll be what you see.
Right. And then finally, Will, the schedule. That's all anybody wants to talk about with Florida, but it sounds like you and I are on the same page where I think the schedule potentially lines up really well for Florida. I mean, I think even 6-0, right? Again, I'm not predicting that, but I think that is highly realistic. Now, I guess you could flip it the other way, though, and say, well, Miami, potentially a toss-up. That is in Gainesville, though, so that's why I lean Florida. A&M, I think you could consider that a toss-up. But again, in Gainesville, who knows what we're getting out of Mississippi State and all their turnover, but I would lean heavily Florida there. And then they own Tennessee. So, I mean, there is a realistic opportunity that Florida gets off to a hot start, and they're ranked, and who knows? The back half, yeah, it looks extremely daunting, and arguably there's not a more daunting stretch in the country. But again, I could argue I don't think LSU is. I think they're going to take a big step back. I think Texas is overrated. What if one or two things goes wrong at Ole Miss, or a job comes open and all of a sudden Lane Kiffin's a candidate? I mean, there's 20 different narratives that could derail Ole Miss. So, but in the magazine, you and Nick, I love this, win, loss, or toss. Cousin Shane and I, we liked it so much. That's kind of what we do for our previews now. But the thing that I was just dying laughing at, of all the games, there's only two consensus wins that you and Nick have, and that's Samford and Mississippi State, which I would agree with. Now, there's some consensus losses, but how unpredictable is this season, given that, I mean, you and Nick can't even decide, you know, the consensus wins and losses here necessarily.
Well, you and I have been talking. We don't even know who the quarterback's going to be 3 weeks in if things start to go a little bit wonky. I mean, look, I think when the pressure gets ratcheted up, two things happen. Things either fall apart or things become very clear as everyone galvanizes together. And so I do think when you get to that Mississippi State game on the road or the UCF game that they have at home, and certainly, you know, I'm not sure national people quite realize how annoying the UCF fans are. And they're just awful when it comes to like trying to prod the big guys when they get an opportunity. And they won that bowl game where Florida didn't care a few years ago. And all Florida fans have heard ever since is crap from the national champion 2017 UCF Knights, or fake national champions, or whatever you want to call it. But so they're annoying. And I think that's the game where, you know, I have that one as a toss up. And if Florida can win that one, they're 4-0 heading into Tennessee. And, you know, you've mentioned it. Florida is just a house of nightmares, even in Knoxville, for the Vols. Am I really willing to put that as a loss? I'm not. In fact, I have it as a win. I think Florida's going to win. I mean, I look at it and I go, Tennessee's in the same spot. Brand new quarterback, played one game last year. You know, you're relying on the same exact thing that Florida is, except Florida's got merch to maybe steady them on the road. Hey, okay, what can happen there? Then you got Kentucky. It's possible for Florida to be 7-0 heading into the game against Georgia. It's also possible that they're 2-4 or 2-5 heading into that game against Georgia. And that's one of the things that I think is going to be really interesting. But even on the back end, you mentioned Texas, that you don't think they're going to be as good. I think I'm probably higher on Texas than you are. But LSU, the only difference between Florida and LSU last year was Jaden Daniels. They went 10-3 with the guy who won the Heisman Trophy and was probably one of the best quarterbacks in like the last decade. And now that I'm relying on a Nussmeier at quarterback. I've seen Nussmeier as an offensive coordinator when I was at Florida. I was not impressed. So, well, you know, call me skeptical that that's going to work there at LSU. And then Ole Miss is, you know, we talked about Florida potentially being a powder keg, but all those transfers they brought in, you will find a lot of Florida fans who are not unhappy that Princely Umanmielen decided to transfer into Ole Miss. And some of it is that, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of accountability when Florida would get run over on defense. And look, it might not have been Umanmielen's fault, but nobody in the fan base wants to hear, oh, well, you guys are criticizing me after you give up 9,000 yards on the ground against Kentucky. Like, it just doesn't work that way. And then Florida State has Jordan Travis no longer there. And we saw what they were when they didn't have Jordan Travis. And DJ Uiagalelei has been an okay quarterback, but hasn't been a fantastic one. So there are, like, those last five games, if you took the 2023 teams and said, hey, you got to play those, I'd be like, oh, crap. Like, that's going to be a disaster. But these aren't the 2023 teams. They're the 2024 teams. All have warts, all have question marks, all have things that you go, okay, like, you know, this might be an issue. The only one I look at and go, it's an L, that is the one against Georgia, where, I mean, and I pick some L's on the back end. I think Florida's going to lose some of those games. But the only one where I go surefire, like, if you put money on Florida, you have a gambling problem, is the Georgia game. Because, I mean, look, they got a returning quarterback. They've got they probably were the best team in the country last year, even though they lost that game against Alabama. I think they roll through that playoff if they get a second opportunity. They didn't get a second opportunity, and I got to see them completely humiliate Florida State, so that was fun. But you know, I think that's the one where I look at and go, okay, you better be prepared for coming off of that one licking your wounds. And that's maybe the hardest part, right? You got Texas, LSU, Ole Miss, and FSU coming off of that. And sometimes you see a team take a loss and it sort of snowballs. And whether Florida's able to right themselves will probably tell a big part of the story for 2024.
Right. All right, Will, can't thank you enough for all your time and previewing the magazine. Before you go, can you tell people how to follow you? And one more time, what's the best way for them to buy the magazine?
Yep. So at Will Miles SEC on Twitter is the best way to follow. The website's readandreaction.com. If you want to get to the mag, you can get to the magazine from there. But if you want to get directly to the magazine, readandreaction.com/mag, that's /MAG. Or you can go to Amazon, search Read and Reaction, and get the hard copy there as well. And hey, Michael, I can't thank you enough. It's so awesome to have friends in this space who will invite you on, even if they're not necessarily Florida fans, and help you get the word out. And we love what you do and appreciate what you do, and certainly are appreciative of you giving us this forum.
Absolutely. Anytime, my friend. Well, good luck this season. I know this is, what is it that Dave Waters always says? It's always a...
Never a dull moment in Gator Nation.
Exactly. So it's going to be just that times a million this year. You know what?
I'm just hoping it's interesting in November. I mean, it's been a couple of years since Florida's, 3 years really, that 2021 season with Mullen and then the 2022 and 2023 with Napier. By the time you got to November, you were debating about the next recruiting class. And I just like to get to the games against LSU and Ole Miss and FSU, where we're not talking about what could be next year, where we're talking about, hey, what could be this year? And it'd be a win, I think, for Napier if he gets past that Georgia game and we're still talking about, hey, there's an opportunity here if you go on a run to potentially sneak into the back end of the playoff. And, you know, it's funny, like, you think about the way things work in the NCAA tournament now in college basketball, where if you make the 64, everybody gets excited. And especially if you make the Final Four, everybody gets excited. I suspect that the standards are going to change a little bit in college football, where you make that top 12, you know, maybe you were in the Outback Bowl in the SEC a few years ago if you were in the top 12. But now you're going to be in a tournament for the national championship, and there's going to be some teams that'll probably make some runs, and it'll be kind of fun to see all that happen too. So hopefully Florida can be one of those teams that does that. And I'm not necessarily counting on it for 2024, but you know, I actually like the hard schedule again because of what I said earlier. It's either we're going to know they're going to be playing for the championship, or we're going to know it's time to move on to the next regime, and I'd rather be sure about it than be on the fence.
Yeah, thankfully the SEC turned around and gave you the same schedule twice.
Well, you know, we'll either make it hard for the new guy or Napier's. No one will be able to turn around and say Billy Napier didn't earn it if he's still the head coach of Florida 3 years from now. So, I mean, look, sell it, right? I mean, you're going to come and play against the best players in the entire world at your age group if you come and play at the University of Florida. That should be an easy sell. And combined with the fact that Florida has one of the biggest fan bases and alumni bases and all that sort of stuff, the money shouldn't be an option or shouldn't be a problem. And so if you can set up the NIL appropriately to where all things are equal, I think Florida has a lot to sell. I think just about every SEC school has a lot to sell. But I mean, I don't know if you've ever been to Gainesville, man, but it's 55% female population and it's over 80 degrees like 90% of the year. So it's a cool place to be if you're a big man on campus, and I would encourage players to go check it out.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.